Welcome to your new Hollywood. You get it? Got it? Good.
Welcome to the show, everyone. We're back with part two of our interview with entertainment attorney Diane Krause. So many things have happened since the taping of this podcast, people. First and foremost, the East Coast was slammed by Hurricane Sandy. I was one of the lucky people who were able to keep their power, and I am so, so thankful for that. And then there's the election for the President of the United States, which I think everyone expected would be too close to call, would carry on for weeks. But I think the thing ended in less than 3 hours. Call me crazy. President Barack Obama has been elected for a second term of office. And let's cross our fingers, folks. Let's hope he lifts us up out of this mess. And if that's not enough excitement for you, we are now being slammed by a nor'easter snowstorm. Yay! Boo! My goodness, Mother Nature does not like us right now. Anyway, let us here at Your New Hollywood, You Get It, Got It Good, take your mind off of this weather, take your mind off of politics, as we dive into the second portion of our interview with Diane, right after this break. Hi, it's Gabrielle again. I want to thank you so much for listening to the show. And just put out there, if you're interested in donating or volunteering to help out the victims of Hurricane Sandy, here are a few organizations that I would highly recommend you reach out to. The first one is the American Red Cross. You are more than welcome to text the word Red Cross to 9099 to make a $10 donation. The organization is also asking people to donate blood, so if you're up for a small prick of a needle and cookies and milk after, please give them a call. The Salvation Army, one of my favorite organizations, is also accepting donations. Please go to SalvationArmyNJ, that's NJ.org. Thank you so much for listening. Now back to the show. What are the instances when a parent or performer should obtain your services, any attorney, an entertainment attorney?
Immediately, you know, come over. No, I think that it's interesting. I think that it really depends on the child and the parent. There are some parents that need the one-on-one attention to sort of reiterate what the laws are and to understand they're specifically tailored to the situation of their child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you go on my website, which is www.dianekrause.com, there are very simplistic, probably a little bit more simple than today, just general rules. Like, I think I have one article on there saying 10 things your lawyer wants you to know about it, child performers.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of sets out the basic things. So that would be one thing that you could do before you think about, you know, calling a lawyer and paying their rates. But the thing that really, if you have an agent and a manager that wants you to sign a representation contract, you know, it may benefit you at that point to contact an attorney for a number of reasons, not just because of what the actual agreement says, but just if it's a lawyer in the business, you may want to just, you know, find out a few things about, you know, they may have some important things to say about the general business and what, you know, ask you some questions that might have you get a better comfort level with who you're dealing with.
What are some of the missteps that you've come across that make you say that people should check in with you?
I mean, usually the situation is that the times that people usually go to see an attorney is when they get a very large role.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when they have a very large role and the agent tells them that they should go get an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's too complicated. If there's a large film role or a large theater role and they want to make sure that they're protected because there are very specific terms in the contract,
mm-hmm.
and they want to make sure that they've thought of everything, then sometimes the agency to protect themselves will tell them to go get an attorney also.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other times when people are trying to decide between different types of representation, between a manager or an agent, or they want to get out of a certain situation, they don't know how, or I'm trying to think of other things. Yeah, I mean, it's not a great idea if you're looking for an agent or a manager. An entertainment lawyer is not going to be much help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're trying to get your child into show business, you know, that's probably, they may have some connections, but that's a really, that's a really iffy situation, because no matter how many great clients a lawyer has, it doesn't mean that they're going to be able to get your child, you know, cast in a specific role or not.
The common situation I've heard of is that when parent and child approach an agent or a manager and they're asked to put out a lot of money.
That, and then, I mean, up front, yes.
Up front, like $2,000, $3,000, $4,000.
Yeah.
And in that instance, it really should only be for photos.
Right. And it should be photos with recoupment. I was talking to, especially in the modeling area, it has to be really, there's a justifiable expense that you recoup in some way. Because some of the bigger modeling agencies do ask for an advance.
Mm-hmm.
Also, one of the other things is that there are times when I've seen in very large music deals, usually a lawyer is really helpful, probably to get a lot of the, I mean, the contract negotiations are really lawyer-driven in those cases.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, in my experience, the music companies, the large music companies, if it's make the children not only sign the contract, but they, a lot of adults have to sign the contract to guarantee the performance of the child.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably useful for the parents sometimes to even get their own attorney. I know that sounds a little overdoing it, but their interest in terms of signing the contract is that the record company wants to make sure that they're on the hook as well as the child,
mm-hmm.
and they can sue the parent if the child walks away. And then they'll probably
send. That's crazy.
Yeah, I know. And there are, and really in New York, it's interesting. There are laws that actually say that if the child is not on the hook, the parent's not on the hook. But the papers are so scary that they really hope that if when the parent signs it, that the parent will be sufficiently enough scared to say, oh my God, you know. And then the other thing is once they do take those contracts into approval, into the surrogate's court or into the Supreme Court in New York, then they are bound. So they are guaranteeing a contract that isn't breakable. So then they're. And in New York, I have lots of cases and not allowed to talk about them because half of them got settled by friends of mine where, you know, the first contract was signed when the rock star was 14 years old,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the manager, and the parent guaranteed the manager's contract, and then the child reneged on the contract, but it happened to be that manager got them their first record deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then there's a lawsuit. And even though it wasn't approved, you know, now the rock star is 22 and a huge star, and guess who decides to sue?
Holy smoke.
Oh, no, it's a wonderful story. And, you know, whenever there's a large, I guess someone once told me there's a huge pot of gold at the end, you know, these contracts, people come out of the woodwork and you can find a lawyer who can say, well, there's something here.
Right.
You know, so unfortunately, I hate to be that realistic, but that's really what it is. So a parent will very often be asked to guarantee in writing the performance of a child or the contract of a child, and they should understand in which circumstances this will come back to bite them as well.
Is that legal?
Yeah, it's not legal. Well, it depends on the state. In New York, there's a general obligations law that says that the parent is not bound by anything the child is not bound by.
Mm.
But, you know, again, it's another indicia of the parent saying, you know, unless the parent, like, was the one who pulled the child away saying, no child of mine will ever continue on this show, then they'll say, oh, my God, the parent is directly liable for this, you know, breach of contract. And therefore, even though I can't sue the child, the parent did something separate. They were tortious. They committed a tort. It wasn't a breach of contract, so we can sue them on a different cause of action.
What exactly is a tort?
A tort is like a harm. Like mm-hmm. you cause a, it's not a contract breach, it's a tort. They wrongfully hurt the record company or the TV company, so they're going to get sued for a different cause of action than a breach of contract.
Mm-hmm.
It's called tortious interference with contract.
Interesting.
Well, you have to prove a lot of it. But people, when they're angry and they want to go after people, they're going to throw those claims against them.
Yeah.
And a lot of them will stick, or at least they'll stick long enough for somebody to say, oh, my God, this is getting on. You know, I don't want to get litigation takes forever. I mean, once you're suing somebody, you know, this is a transactional lawyer with some litigation experience. It's a nightmare.
Like what you're listening to? should check out our blog at www.yougetitgotitgood.com. Or you can always shoot us an email at podcast@yougetitgotitgood.com.
Does Part 86 cover theater, television, music as well?
Right. It does cover, it covers all those areas, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting. I wrote a much bigger article before 186 came that just talked about which, like, for example, in California, mm-hmm. you can't get a management contract approved. So anyone who signs a contract in California as, with a manager and lives in California, they can walk away from a management contract if they're a minor. That's just the way it is.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah, in New York, you sign a management contract. Very, very seldom do you ever see a manager take the contract in for approval
mm-hmm.
because it's such a pain in the neck to do it in New York, and it's very expensive. But it can be done, and I've seen people try to do that when the music act, it's usually a music act, mm-hmm. has a record recording deal, and they usually put the management agreement in and say, I want to send the music, the management contract in with the music contract, and we want to get it approved at the same time.
You know, understanding that music is a totally different animal.
Right.
Than, you know, theater or television. People have to perform at all kinds of odd hours.
Right.
How on earth are they stepping up and meeting these regulations? Like with tutoring and only being allowed to work for a certain amount of hours, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I'm not sure if it specifically says the music, but it is for services.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably has. I have not really looked into that. That's a really good question.
Well, no, I'm just sort of bringing it up just to ask out to the whole audience and everybody. Yeah. It's just sort of like understanding that, you know, these rules are not asking a great deal, in my opinion. I think
right.
that, you know, being that you're dealing with minors, it's important that they're met.
Yeah.
Do the laws differ greatly between people who work in theater and those who work in television?
The times do, not that much from what I can see. And from what I can look at right now,
mm-hmm.
it's the amount of ratio of child to guardian because of backstage issues.
Mm-hmm.
And times are different. They're a little bit more lenient on live theater. They also, yeah, I mean, that's, no, the other thing, from what I can see, is there's also, I think they can't work, from what I remember, because it's a pretty explicit, in terms about technical rigging. I mean, there's some specific things that have to do with technical tech rehearsals and things like that. But yeah,
mm-hmm.
they're just specifically tailored to the needs of a live performance versus that of a television film. I think they just tried to tailor it to them. But
and I believe I heard you say, or maybe I have read this, that the laws differ from state to state, correct?
Oh yeah, they do.
Okay.
I mean, California, it's a much easier process. People are much more familiar with it,
mm-hmm.
and there's no guardian appointed. It's usually just, you know, much more of something where you fill in the application and the contracts get approved.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much harder. So it's always been much easier to get, you know, most of the time whenever somebody calls to do something in New York, you try to find a reason that California would apply.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones I've been involved in is because California didn't apply. That, you know, they weren't sure California applied, so they did one in New York and one in California for the same child,
mm-hmm.
Which we called suspenders and belts, but, you know.
Well, when I think of all the different productions taking place across the entire United States, and this includes reality shows, I mean, there are some states that don't even have child labor laws.
Right, exactly.
So it's sort of like they don't have child labor laws, yet they do have a film and television division. Who
right.
you would think would have some responsibility.
Right. I mean,
but
the big, yeah.
Do they?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it'd be really interesting. I guess they would look to the unions
mm-hmm.
to see what they are. The problem is that the biggest problem I had in terms of these regulations is that there are times there's no employer. Like, mm-hmm. you get paid by a 1099. So there's no employer, and it's like, well, then who's supposed to get the, you know, who's supposed to report all this stuff? And I actually said, well, at least the parent has a responsibility for making sure that the permit is gotten and then they put aside the stuff in the coop. But that's the thing. There's no employer that even has to be, report, you know, obligated to do all this stuff. So that becomes a problem. And some agents have, you know, explained that when they do commercials and there's no employer because they just get a 1099 and there's no, then they have to be responsible for taking care of all the stuff for the child, which is just a lot more work. So,
wow.
It's a very, very, very good beginning, but you know, it's a very good beginning, but it took a long time to get here. But
why do you think it took so long?
I think that there were just a lot of elements, and I think a lot of people, we finally got on board, and it met a lot of resistance. It's very hard. I mean, you're right. It's interesting. People have said to me that the way they feel after they had their child before they had their child are two different things. They got much more protective and understood it after they had children. So, you know, that's one of the things. You understand how important it is and how more vulnerable children are and what can happen to them. You know, it's scary enough for someone who's 18 or 19, but if you're putting people who are 5 or 6 in a situation like that, you want to make sure that at least there's some type of standard of behavior. And it's hard. It's also a business that's looked upon as something desirable and glamorous, and that makes people willing to ignore what you consider appropriate or normal behavior or acceptable behavior. So it's good that there's some minimum behavior expected, you know, like you're supposed to get education during, you're supposed to keep up with your schooling and things like that. Anyway.
Well, let's take a quick break because I have two final questions for you.
Okay.
Like what you're listening to? Then shoot an email to podcast@yougetitgotitgood.com or leave a comment on our blog at yougetitgotitgood.com.
Okay, and we're back for the final segment of our show. And I guess in terms of Part 186, Diane, it's available for anyone to read, correct?
Oh, it's on the website, yes. If you Google Part 186 in New York State and child performance, you can get the current version of it very easily. And it's basically very detailed. I mean, I wrote a blog about it, which hopefully will pop up also, and I summarize it in 3 pages. But it's, you know, subpart 186.1 is purposes, scope, and exceptions, and then there's definitions and responsibilities of parents and responsibility of employers. So it's like really a very detailed menu of what to do when you have an employment situation with an infant, with a minor. And also, if you go to my website, there's a blog that's on my website that summarizes it, and there's also some just general points of law about minors. And eventually, if I can get it, there's a bigger article that will be on there. It's more of a legal article that compares California and New York law. But there's also a couple of other places that we were just talking about. Paul Peterson from the Donna Reed Show has an organization, and he has a lot of information. It's definitely very pro-child.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has a very specific point of view, but he has very, very strong feelings of children and entertainment, and it's worth going to his website to see what he has to say. One of my colleagues, Robert Pafundi, P-A-F-U-N-D-I, who's a very capable child specialist in child minors laws in California, is a good person. He's coming out with a book soon, actually, and we've co-counseled on some things together, and he's got a lot of very good articles also that really pertain more to California law.
We can definitely include the link to that on our blog. And with Paul Peterson, I believe the name of his organization, he formed an organization called a minor Consideration.
Right. I mean, the unions have some wonderful stuff, and the Department of Labor does, too. The unions really have tried very, very hard and have, you know, really been very thoughtful about what they're doing. It's just that, unfortunately, it doesn't apply to the non-union stuff, and we've been trying to... That's why we have to deal with some of the stuff that doesn't deal with the unions. That's when you really have to be very careful.
And you can go to the Department of Film and Television here in New York, and they'll happily steer you towards the Department for Special Services for Children.
Right.
And they have a handbook and everything.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely resources. The hardest thing is to balance, you know, the whole point of that, you know, this is such a wonderful opportunity versus what are you really getting your child into,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's really important.
That's important. What are you getting your kid into? It's hard because, you know, I think Key and I actually, we did a podcast maybe about a year or two ago where we were talking about this very thing. And, you know, we have friends that call us and they say, look, I got this contract or this, you know, agreement. Should I sign it or not? And we'd say, you know what, if you're asking us, those are all points telling you you should be calling an attorney.
Right.
If you're asking us, it means you're hesitant and you're signing a document that you don't understand.
Right.
So
it sometimes pays to pay an hour of an attorney's time, even if you end up signing it just as it is, but you understand what you're signing and what the laws surrounded are.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of times that you'll know you're signing a lot of things that on there that aren't legally binding. And you may not want to change them, but you know that they're not going to be legally binding
mm-hmm.
if push comes to shove, which is a weird answer. But if you know that your child is signing something and you're guaranteeing the signature and it's not, you know, it's not something that can be guaranteed in New York, then you might as well go ahead. Just be careful that when she hits, before she hits 18, you know, or just the second she hits 18, you're going to be rescinding the contract.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Well, that was the question. So it was like, why? I asked you, I think, during our pre-interview, like, why are people so hesitant to go to an entertainment lawyer? The biggest answer you gave me was money, of course.
Right.
Does legal aid, not to deter them from coming to wonderful people like you, but does legal aid help people with things like this?
They should know the law. I mean, minors is a specialized area, but anyone, any lawyer should be able to look things up and be able to tell them basic things
mm-hmm.
about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, you know, there is, you know, a network of people. There's a, every year Variety, at least every year they do a special, instead of the Hollywood Reporter, on child agents and child managers, and they do special issues of that. I don't know what you think of them, but at least that's at least a community of people that are out there advertising.
Mm-hmm. No, I do like them because they do a lot of features on agents, some of the agents and people that I haven't met. And I think that all parents should pick it up. But that's one thing I think that's missing, that a number of parents don't read the trades.
Right.
They don't keep on top of, I mean, they read Backstage and all the casting listings, but I never hear them say that they're doing their due diligence and research and keeping up with the news on what's going on in terms of things like Part 186, et cetera.
Right. And it's very hard because it's something that, that's something that, you know, I'm scared that you're having this type of interviews. But, yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, it's also probably would be great to talk to some parents who spend a lot of time backstage and on movie sets. Because I used to, years ago, talk to, you know, mothers who spent time on location, you
mm-hmm.
know, and what they went through and what they observed was really interesting also.
Well, it's funny. I, you know, working on Sesame Street, I noticed that a lot of parents were either working outside the office, you know, telecommuting, as they say, or writing their thesis papers. But I think, you know, that was a whole different animal. It certainly wasn't like being on a, you know, a major primetime show or in theater.
Yeah. I remember sharing a green room. I was down for some production work in Florida years ago in Nickelodeon, and my show, which was called Hi Honey, I'm Home, was sharing a green room with Clarissa. And the mom from Clarissa had a lot of other kids, so she was there with her other kids while Clarissa was. It was great. It was like there were six or seven. I mean, not there were six or seven. A few other kids that the mom had in the green room while Clarissa was working. So,
Somebody's going to write a story about the green room one day, and, you know, we're going to just, like, stampede to get a copy.
Yeah.
When people approach you, what are, like, the top three questions that people ask you when they discover that you're an entertainment attorney?
Well, the first one usually is there are two things. I've met mothers whose child or older child is in show business, and they're very much tell me, either the child is already well in the business and it's the child's life and the child's career, you know, mm-hmm. And it's very specific, and they kind of do a check to see if I know the person or whatever, and that type of thing. If the person's on the stage a lot, or they'll start asking me a lot of questions as though the child, they want to push the child, and I usually tell them to listen to their child and see if the child really wants to do it themselves, because in my experience, that the most successful children are the ones who really drag their parents to the auditions, you know. And then, you know, usually it's a checkup where I'll listen to different situations. There's been times that I've just listened to, you know, what their jobs are, who their agents are, and I'll just listen to different, like we would listen to any other talent, just to make sure that the situation is that they have decent grades and they really have a plan in terms of education. If I hear that they're really not interested in school and they're really not doing well in school and they don't seem to have a plan to, you know, even graduate, you know, past a certain point, it kind of upsets me. I mean, that's really where I guess I'm pretty education-oriented and believe in a well-rounded childhood, so.
But a well-rounded childhood is key to them even being a bigger success when they're an adult.
Right.
There's times when, you know, and I know that Kia has had this situation as well, where we've gotten kids who are within reading age, like ages 10, 11, 12, 13, and can't read.
Right.
And I remember the first time that happened, I was in a state of shock. Something's failing there. There's some poor choices being made.
Yeah. I mean, one, I think it's really important that, I don't know, it depends on if the parent, it usually helps if the parent some of the best parents have either don't know anything, and the kid really is the one who wants to do it, and they're just learning because the child really wants to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is the parents are in the business, and the child really wants to be in the business because the parent is in the business and is doing it in their own way in their own time, and it's like a family business, and they're okay with that.
Right.
So, you know, and either one is okay. It's just, it's really hard when the parent is really wants the career, you know. I once remember talking to a mother, and she kept talking about her career at the Copacabana, and it was just really painful because it was pretty obvious that she was the one who wanted the career and not the child, you know, and it really was. It made me unhappy because, you know, that you really want to tell the child at that point that they should be doing what they want to do. I know it's hard. I've seen it both ways. I've seen it where, and then I've also seen it where the child really, really wants it, and the parents somehow go along for the ride and don't really get it. You know, even though there's some very strange reactions I've seen also.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there's one situation I'm thinking of now where both parents are screenwriters. And there's a child, and she's doing great, but she's very, I think it's just who the people are. It's always an individual thing, too, so.
Yeah. Well, I think it's in the parents' best interest. If you're new to this industry and you're trying to work your way around, it's doing research, reading all you can, tapping into some of the websites and things that Diane has mentioned on this show. And probably trying to get referrals and talking to other parents about their experiences.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's really helpful. And then just, I think a lot of it is just sort of understanding that one thing isn't going to make or break. It's just a process. It's like anything else in life, you know.
Yeah, and in the end, it's all about protecting your child.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all about protecting your child and not having them come out to be some sort of horror story.
Yeah,
they're exposed to a lot of different things when they're out there, and I think it would be best, you'd be able to sleep better at night knowing that you've covered all your bases.
Yeah, and not to be afraid to ask questions. I heard a really bad story about somebody who was 14 that was told that they were going to do some type of show, and it turned out to be an escort service. I mean, you know, there's some bad stuff out there. So.
Oh, my God. That's just crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny, when you threw out the fashion industry, we'll probably have to have you come back when they come up with something to sort of, you know, help out the minors in that industry, because that's just, like, globally crazy.
That they're going to basically look at some regulations that are similar to the ones in the UK, and then, but there's a whole set of other issues because of the way that they have to go through the runway and the print issues. So I'm looking forward to hearing more from them because they're sort of going back and they really know a lot more about the field, so they're going to go back and promulgate. They're good lawyers, too, so they're going to go back and come up with some ways to address those concerns. And we're hoping
that'll...
Awesome. Yeah.
That'll be good, and I'll be glad for them. Well, thank you, Diane, for being on the show. And, folks, if you want to, you know, learn more about Diane and her firm, the website is www.DianeKrausz.com. And you're also on Twitter.
I'm trying to. I'm Twittering. I've been told I have to Twitter.
You're at Diane Krause on Twitter. Good for you.
Yeah, I'm trying not to make it, you know, like boring. So we're going to try it. And not talk about it. So we're going to Twitter.
You're going to Twitter. Don't worry. Some people may tweet you and have pretty good questions, and they'll help you get the 140-character conversation started.
Okay.
But I want to thank you so very much for being on the show, Diane. I think you've dropped a lot of helpful tips and information for our listeners, at least enough to get them jump-started. Guys, you can always catch up to us here at Your New Hollywood. You Get It, Got It Good. We're at YouGetItGotItGood.com. That's our blog. We're on Twitter at You, the letter U, Get It, Got It Good. And you can also send us an email. We're at podcast@YouGetItGotItGood.com. Diane, thank you, and have a great evening.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, take care.